Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
This week we've been talking about language for our series Speaking My Language. We've talked about the language education gap in the United States, and yesterday we spoke to a couple of polyglots who've learned many different languages as a hobby.
It's more wanting to discover more of the world. I learned Russian, I learned Korean. It's just what I like to do. It's connecting with these different cultures.
Today, we'll hear from someone who's made a living off of fluency in different languages. Lynn Vissant is a teacher and writer and was an interpreter at the United Nations for 22 years, interpreting French and Russian into English. Lynn, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for inviting me.
And by the way, we called you an interpreter there as opposed to a translator. Explain what the difference is.
The difference, and a lot of people confuse this, even some interpreters and translators, is that with a translator, you give the person a written text in one language, and the person will give you back a written text in another language. With an interpreter, you will speak to the person in one language, and the person will orally interpret that and speak in the other language. It's the difference between written and oral.
And is it much more difficult to do it as it's happening as opposed to waiting for the person to finish their sentence or their comment and then interpreting it?
Well, what you're asking about is the difference between what we call simultaneous interpretation, where you interpret right away or as quickly as you can. The usual gap for simultaneous interpretation is approximately 6 seconds. Huh. Anything longer than that, somebody will notice.
So is it harder to do simultaneous translation than to wait until the person is finished? In other words, if a politician is making a statement, do you wait until they're done with the statement and then interpret what they've said, or are you interpreting as they're speaking?
No, you're usually going as they're speaking, and you're hoping that your speaker will pause and pause long enough to give you a chance to interpret. Hmm. Most experienced politicians and speakers who've worked with interpreters know that they have to stop at the end of a sentence or a clause to give the interpreter time to interpret.
That must be pretty hard.
It is. You get used to it.
Mm-hmm. What skills do you think you have to have to be a good interpreter?
You have to have speed. You have to be able to listen, immediately grasp what someone is saying, and put it into another language, and put it into grammatical sentences and full sentences. One of the worst things an interpreter can do is not finish a sentence.
So who are some of the most notable people that you've ever had to interpret?
Well, I've done quite a few, not necessarily at the UN, some of them outside the UN. I interpreted for Boris Yeltsin when he was the president of Russia. He was quite easy because he spoke very slowly. I interpreted for Jimmy Carter when he was receiving a Russian Baptist minister, and Carter was quite easy to do because he had very good diction and spoke very clearly. And then there are all kinds of UN delegates. Some of them go like bats out of hell at 100 miles an hour, and others realize that the interpreter needs time, and they slow down.
And when you are interpreting for somebody like that, somebody high profile, do you have to worry about how you are interpreting, how you're presenting their thoughts to the other party?
Well, you want to be sure that you're speaking in grammatical sentences, that you're using proper intonation. It is very difficult to listen to a monotone when somebody is not varying the sound of their voice and things are monotonous because eventually you'll lose your audience.
Right.
And one thing, when you train interpreters, you train them in the use of intonation and intonation in the language into which they're interpreting, not from which they're working.
Is there ever a moment when the politician says something that might be offensive to the other and you want to soften it a little before you interpret?
That happens, but that's not your job.
Uh-huh.
Your job is to interpret what is actually being said, even though it may be very unpleasant, or it may be something that you personally find repulsive or disagree with. It's a bit like acting. I mean, there are plenty of great actors who act murderers, even though they'd never in their lives kill anybody.
You've got to make sure that you know how to say, "Don't blame the messenger" in Russian.
Exactly.
So did you grow up speaking both French and Russian?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because my parents were Russian emigres. Their parents had left Russia during the revolution. with their families. And after they bounced around Europe for a while, because like so many other people, they thought these were minor political disturbances that would soon blow over, but didn't. They wound up in France, where they stayed for 20 years. They got married in Paris, and my father was in the French army during the war. Then they came to America in 1941, to New York, where I was born.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's more difficult to interpret from Russian to English or from French to English?
I don't really think one can make a comparison. If you're raised with the languages, it doesn't matter. If you're a native speaker of English who doesn't know either, it's probably more difficult from Russian because the structure of Russian is so much different from the structure of English.
Did you notice a difference in the Russian language after the Soviet Union broke up?
Oh, yes, tremendously, tremendously. Before the Soviet Union broke up, you could interpret or translate with a fairly limited vocabulary of clichés. And a lot of people did exactly that. And once the Soviet Union broke up, the language style changed completely. All kinds of colloquial words came into the language. Hmm. Words that people would not ordinarily use in conversation became common. The whole style of the language changed overnight almost.
Like what? I mean, I don't speak Russian, but just speak in a little bit of Russian. Show me what you're talking about.
Well, okay, that's all right. Fine. Let's do this. Keep going. Things like that.
Mm-hmm. And how would you say those things in Russian?
Ну давай, пойдем, сделаем. Mm-hmm. It would depend on the context.
Okay. Were there ever times as an interpreter when you were stumped by an expression or an accent or a confusing speaker or a joke that just didn't translate?
I think every interpreter I know, every professional, has at some point been stumped. And anyone who tells you they haven't been is not telling you the truth. What you learn is how to cope with it.
There are also probably moments when the conversation that you're having to interpret is talking about things that aren't talked about all the time. Like maybe there's, you know, a topic like energy or fisheries that you're going to have to interpret. Do you have to study up on those before you do that?
Yes. I mean, at the UN, if you knew pretty much what meeting you would be in the next day, and very often you could get the documents for the meeting in advance. And if it was technical, that was very helpful. Your examples are very good. For example, fisheries. Nobody tends to know in three languages the names of 15 different kinds of fish. So you would study up on that and look on that and prepare for it. For the regular political social language, that is pretty much the same, and there you get very used to it.
There's also probably a lot of UN jargon that you have to know.
Oh, absolutely. It's called UNese.
Give me an example of it.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of my delegation, I wish to assure you of our total and complete support for the proposal which has just been made by the majority of delegations present, comma, including those of the Third World.
I feel okay? Like you've had to say that a few times.
So do I.
Yeah. So let's talk about language in general. Do you find that you think differently in Russian or French than you do in English?
Yes, I think so, in part because of the syntax. In Russian, syntax and word order are quite different from English. Very often you have a verb toward the end of the sentence, and you can usually tell when somebody is not a native speaker of the language by their syntax, by the word order of their sentences.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking to a friend who is from Mexico and is bilingual, and another friend of hers who is also from Mexico had moved to the United States when she was about 13. So that was the last time that she was living in a Spanish-speaking country. Mm-hmm. And my friend said that her friend sounded like a teenager when she spoke in Spanish because that was the point at which she stopped, you know, learning it.
That can be a problem for children raised by parents speaking a foreign language, which is that at some point, unless they study the language, unless they really delve into it, unless they're interested in it, their knowledge of the language will stop at the age of a 12 or 13-year-old as they move into upper grades of high school or college where they're thinking and writing primarily in English.
So overall, you know, we're talking all week about foreign language on the show. What are your thoughts mm-hmm. on the benefits of speaking more than one language, which is something that, frankly, the majority of Americans don't do?
I agree with you completely. It's something the majority of Americans, I would add, unfortunately, don't do. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more of it. I think there is far too little emphasis now on the learning of foreign languages. It's very useful both in terms of thinking and learning the structure of other languages, and of course for travel and for getting to know people and for literature. Reading a translation is not the same thing as reading a book mm-hmm. in the original.
What language would you like to learn still?
Well, at the UN, where I worked for 22 years, there were free language courses for any UN staff members, any of the six official UN languages. So I took Spanish, mm-hmm. I took Chinese, and I took a little Arabic, and that was great fun. And if I had the chance, I'd love to go back to Chinese because I didn't have the time to keep up with it, and I really enjoyed those courses, and they were very well taught.
That's Lynn Visson, who is a teacher, writer, and former UN interpreter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.